the heart of flyover country, this is Spin Sold Separately.
Oh, what a time to be down and out sick for a couple of weeks. Anything going on? I miss anything? Oh, what a news cycle we live in. I tell you, it's impossible. It is impossible to keep up with. I mean, whether I've been down and out with a complete lack of energy for 2 weeks or not, it is very hard to keep up with everything going on in the world, in the news, in sports. I can't keep up, but I'll tell you what, no shortage of things to talk about, and I am not going to waste your time. We're going to get right into it. Thank you, everybody, for joining me once again for Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Sincerest apologies. This has not been a good winter for sicknesses, and I'm not just talking about mine. I mean, yeah, the last couple weeks, I've been just very lethargic, and it's kind of been all I can do to get up, go do the day job, come home, and I've just been down and out once I get home these last 10, 12 days. I just get up, work, come home, sleep, rinse, repeat. And I know I'm not alone. I mean, these colds or flus that are lasting for multiple weeks, there's people I know with, you know, these coughs that have lasted for a month or two. This norovirus going around, dear God, my sincerest condolences if you or anyone around you has had to deal with that. That is the absolute worst, and I'm not going to sit here and say that what I've gone through is anything close to that, but I know that's just raging around like crazy, and I'm not a fan of winter to begin with, and I know, you know, illnesses aren't exclusively limited to wintertime. You can get sick in the summer, but man, it's just so prevalent, especially in these cold climates in the wintertime. It just feels like everybody around you is sick. Everything around you is infected. You're washing your hands just religiously, hysterically. You got the hand sanitizer. I mean, you're looking for it at every single door. I'm pushing doors open with my forearms, my shoulders. Anything it takes to stay healthy. Like I said, it got me that one time that I was in the car with somebody that had obviously been sick and clearly was contagious, and yeah, I'm still fighting it off. I feel mostly fine, but just the lethargy just won't go away. But we're going to get through this just fine. There is so much to talk about. Like I said, we're going to get right into it. I tried doing this a couple days ago. I had a day off a few days ago, and I tried to sit down and get this out, and I spent like 2 hours and 20 minutes just aimlessly rambling. I was clearly still not with it, still half asleep, and I got about 10 minutes into editing it, and I'm just like, this is not savable. So I scrapped it and tightened up the outline a little bit, and hopefully we'll be a little more direct and nowhere near 2+ hours. Quick update on the story that I gave you in that last episode about my friend whose lifelong friend decided to pull the 2025 progressive card and disown her as a friend because of the way she voted. I missed one detail. That message from that friend was sent to my friend on their wedding anniversary. Again, right, they're the good guys. Don't ever forget that. The progressives, they're the good guys. Anywho, how about that Super Bowl, huh? I didn't win any money on it. I never do. I stayed away from betting on it because I felt like Philadelphia was going to win, but I couldn't bring myself to bet against Kansas City. What an amazing performance by Philadelphia. I have never in my life seen Patrick Mahomes that helpless, that uncomfortable. I mean, the domination from the Eagles on both sides of the line of scrimmage was so obvious. I don't know how much of the game you watched. You know, the game itself wasn't all that interesting. After about the, you know, first quarter and a half, you kind of felt like it was over. if you didn't watch much of the rest of the game, I know it got to 40-22 at the end. It was nowhere near that close. That score resulted from a very late, very Hail Mary-ish touchdown on a circus catch by that amazing wide receiver that Kansas City's got, Xavier Worthy. Boy, are we going to hear a lot from that young man over the next 10 years in the NFL. But makes this circus catch, you know, everybody knows the game's over. He makes this crazy acrobatic catch in the end zone. I don't remember how much time was left, 30 seconds, minute and a half, something like that. And then an even crazier catch on a completely meaningless two-point conversion that I'm sure that led to the transfer of many, many millions of dollars on those last 2 points from people that had 0-0 or whatever to 2-0. Some people got very lucky. Some people basically had it taken from them. But, you know, that's why we do it. That's why we play those silly games. And, you know, somebody's got to win. Yeah, one of these days, it'll be me. I think it's been 15 or 16 years since I've won anything on a Super Bowl board. But I digress. So, yeah, it wasn't as close as the score ended up. That game was over at halftime. Congratulations first to Nick Sirianni, the head coach of the Eagles. Now, maybe, just maybe, maybe Philly fan can stop banging on this guy who does absolutely nothing but win games. Nick Sirianni is 54-23, including the playoffs. That's a winning percentage of over 700. He has 2 Super Bowl appearances and now 1 Super Bowl victory. So seriously, Philly fan, can you lay off the guy? I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. Be careful what you wish for. All the guy does is win like 12, 13, 14 games a year, has brought you to multiple Super Bowls, absolutely dominated a 2-time defending champ in Kansas City this year in the big game. Just be happy with the winning. Take the win. Be happy with your success. Just for once, don't always be looking to the next thing. The guy is clearly a great coach. I don't care how many stars you have around you, how good your coordinators are. Bad head coaches don't win Super Bowls. Be happy with who you've got, Philly. You've got a good one there. The Philadelphia defensive line wrecked this game, basically from the start. And the most amazing part of it was they never blitzed. They created all that chaos with rushing, just rushing their front four. I mean, man, I really wonder what other teams are going to do to try to emulate this. I sure as hell hope my Vikings do. Man, would I love to see our defense play like that. And our defense was decent this year, but I don't want to have to blitz 5 or 6 guys every other play to generate pressure. Philly didn't have to do that. They had the number one defense throughout this season, and it showed. Now, I don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, Jalen Carter, Zach Bond, Josh Sweat, Darius Slay, Cooper DeJean, who had that pick 6 in the second quarter that all but looked like it was the game-sealing play, like 18 minutes into the game. They were all outstanding. Vic Fangio is an amazing defensive coordinator. What a hire by Nick Sirianni to bring him in this year to fix really what the one weakness was that Philly had last year. And all Fangio did was turn this into, by far and away, the number one defense in the NFL all year. And they absolutely owned this Super Bowl. I mean, Jalen Hurts was fantastic. Well-deserved winner of the MVP, but that defense making that Kansas City offense, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, making them look that pedestrian. No one has been able to do that for the better part of the last 3 years. So absolutely amazing job by Philly. For what it lacked in drama, it made up for in domination. And I like watching really good players and really good units take over games. That defensive unit, that defensive front specifically of Philadelphia, I mean, if you could hand out multiple MVPs, that defensive front, all 4 of them, I think, deserve all kinds of recognition. One thing that was very obvious during the Super Bowl that had nothing to do with the actual game or the sport of football was, in my opinion, the obvious culture shift that was on display. Starting with the players openly and frequently and repeatedly thanking God before and after the game, unapologetically thanking their Lord and Savior. giving all glory to God. It was so wonderful to see and hear that from these athletes. You know, our kids, you know, for better or for worse, look up to these players, and they look to them for guidance on how to be and how to behave. And it was so heartwarming to see all of these athletes thanking God above all else, before they went to themselves, before they went to their teammates or their coaches or anything else. Multiple players, Saquon, Jalen Hurts, so many of them thanked God above all. But when the interview started, so many of them started their response, you know, hey, how was your team able to do this? How were you able to come this far? And so many of them thanked God before they even thought of anything else. And that was incredibly encouraging, in my opinion. The commercials were refreshingly normal again, for the most part. There was very little woke crap in the commercials that I watched. Very, very little political trash. No far left progressive messaging buried into these ads. I mean, God, we've spent years suffering through just ideologically leftist ads, and you're just waiting to be lectured by Nike or Pfizer or Doritos or, you know, whatever it was. You were just waiting for some embedded leftist messaging, and there was very, very little of that this year, and I gotta tell you, it was incredibly refreshing from my perspective. And not only that, not only did a lot of that stuff get shoved off the cliff where it belongs, several of these ads were unapologetically very pro-America, very pro-military, very pro-strength. This stuff didn't used to be controversial, and I don't want to hear the left say, oh, well, Trump's back in office now, so now all the ad messaging at the Super Bowl was totally right-wing. I missed the part where being patriotic and being pro-America and pro our armed services and pro a strong America became right-wing. When I was growing up, that was universal. It wasn't controversial. It wasn't one-sided or the other. That was one of the things that wove us together as a society. We have become so hyper-focused on what separates us and what makes us unique that we have completely ignored, to our detriment, I would argue, that which brings us together, that which we do have in common, that which we do universally hold dear. I don't feel, I mean, I know it's become right wing or of the right or in the eyes of the left controversial. I don't look at being pro-America or pro-military or being a proud, strong American as right wing or controversial. At some point, loving America became political, and I hate that. I really sincerely hope that this was a step in returning to that. And boy, this whole Super Bowl experience, from the pregame to the ads to removing the stupid-ass end racism messaging from the end zones, this felt like a return to normal. And oh my goodness, was it a welcome return, in my opinion. President Trump was in attendance. I did not know this. He is the first sitting president ever to attend a Super Bowl. Somebody even asked me last week leading up to it, you know, when word got out that Trump was going to be there, somebody asked me, hey, has a president ever gone to a Super Bowl? And I immediately said, oh, yeah, yeah. And I even said, I thought George W. Bush had gone to one. But obviously, I was mistaken at that time, and I must apologize to that friend of mine, because it never occurred to me that in 59 years, no president had ever attended a Super Bowl. I mean, let's hope this becomes a thing. I mean, there's nothing more American than the Super Bowl and all the pomp and circumstance and the hoopla around it and leading up to it. I hope this becomes a thing. You know, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. The fact that the president was in attendance at one of, you know, I would say one of the biggest American culture days on the calendar every year is the Super Bowl. I would love to see this become a regular thing. I had no idea that he was the first, and I'm sure he won't be the last, and I hope he goes every year, and I hope whoever succeeds him in 2028 and beyond, I hope they go too, because there's not many things that we do in this country that is more uniquely American than celebrating the Super Bowl. I mean, Super Bowl Sunday is like, it's almost like a holiday. We treat it like a holiday. People call in sick the day after to work like it was a holiday. So, yeah, hopefully that is the beginning of a trend of presidents attending the Super Bowl. President Trump was loudly cheered when they showed him on the Jumbotron during the national anthem. You know, I'm not much for making noise during the national anthem, but there was an audible cheer from the crowd. Again, don't make noise during the national anthem, but that was heartwarming to me. That's pro-American. That's our president, and he's here. And we're going to cheer for him, for America. The anthem was great. America the Beautiful was great. I'm going to say something probably controversial here. I am not a fan of Raise Every Voice and Sing. It's a great song. And there are many, many times and places for that song to be done. And I don't know the name of the performer that did it. She was fantastic. It was a moving performance of a song that does not belong alongside our national anthem. This song has been described by people that are in support of it being played when it's being played at these events as the Black national anthem. We have a national anthem. It is called the Star Spangled Banner, and it represents all Americans. We do not have two national anthems. We do not need a Black national anthem. You want to perform Raise Every Voice and Sing at concerts? Knock yourselves out. It is a beautiful song when you listen to it. And again, this performance, this is not a knock on the performance. It was great. It was a very, very well done version of that song. It does not belong alongside our national anthem. We have one national anthem. It represents all of us, period. The halftime show, I really don't have an opinion on it. I'll be honest. And the young ones out there are going to laugh and mock and ridicule me for this. I did not know who Kendrick Lamar was. I must have asked people multiple times leading up to it. Who's doing the halftime show again? I didn't know who Kendrick Lamar was. And as it went on, I did not know who Drake was either. But I gave it a chance. 30 seconds in, I tuned it out. Not because it was uniquely bad. It's just that's not my kind of music. That's just not my thing. I couldn't really understand what he was saying. You know, I'm not opposed to rap. I mean, I guess I'm more adjacent to that genre. I guess I'm a little more R&B maybe. But I mean, you go back to the 90s and early 2000s. If you look at my Spotify playlist, I've got Biggie on there. I've got Warren G. I mean, you know, I'm not completely averse to that genre of music, but this Kendrick Lamar's version of it just really wasn't my thing. So again, I'm not going to criticize it. I will admit I didn't watch much of it after the first, you know, like I said, about 30 seconds. I'm like, okay, this really isn't my thing. So I just kind of tuned it out. I've heard the full range of reviews from, you know, because everything in the 21st century is the best ever or the worst ever. I'll leave that judgment to those who are more into that type of music. It's just not my style. You know, sign up the Eagles or the band, not the football team. Sign up the Eagles or Elton John and I'm in. But outside of that, if it's an artist from about 2010 and beyond, I probably don't know who they are. There was a very heavy celebrity representation throughout the pregame and throughout the commercials. And again, this felt like a part of the return to normalcy. I like it when randos get a chance to perform on these, you know, most of these ads during the Super Bowl. I mean, it's the Super Bowl for the marketing teams at these companies that spend these millions of dollars for these 30-second ads during the Super Bowl. It's their Super Bowl, too. So you're usually getting their best material. I like when the randos get a chance in front of an audience that big. You know, some people have gotten their big break in Super Bowl ads because there's so many eyes on it, and the ads largely, you know, with exceptions, but most of them are so fun and so creative But, you know, okay, you know, this year definitely was the celebrity year as opposed to the rando, you know, E-list actor just trying to make a name for themselves, cutting ads. You know, this, it felt like a part of the return to normalcy. And contrary to what the left has to say, normalcy is okay. Societies need a normal to stay together, to tether to. Abnormal is fine, and it is to be accepted. But having norms is not only okay, I think it's a necessity for multicultural societies such as ours to stay tight-knit and stay together. And again, one of our norms has always been proud American. And man, that was so good to see throughout. From the pregame show, the pregame that Brad Pitt did, it was all about American strength and, you know, what it is to be American and how that all ties into football and the Super Bowl. And I mean, and Brad Pitt wasn't alone. I mean, Tom Cruise, Samuel L. Jackson, Morgan Freeman, Post Malone, Peyton Manning, I saw Vin Diesel, John Hamm. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Overall, I just love the Super Bowl. I love Super Bowl Sunday. I love the day. I love the food. I spent the day with my sister and my brother-in-law, my nephews and my dad. And it's one of my favorite days of the year, even though I've never seen my team play in it in the 46, almost 47 years I've been on this earth. I would have liked for the game to have been a little more competitive, but it's, you know, it's all good. No one does major sporting events like the United States, and more specifically the NFL. They just know how to market their product like no other entity on earth. Sadly, the end of the Super Bowl signals the end of the football season. Checking my watch, only 5.5 months until training camp. Oh, it's okay. We still have free agency. We got the draft, mini camps. There really is no off season in the NFL anymore. And as a football fan, I mean, I'll admit, I eat it all up. I can't get enough. So again, congrats to Philadelphia on a well-deserved Super Bowl title. Now please stop destroying your own city. I want to spend a little time here on Trump, Elon, Doge, the media, and the inevitable court battles that, you know, when I wrote this, were incoming, and as I'm discussing this, are now ongoing. Donald Trump ran on a platform that included very specifically cutting the size of the federal government. He did not hide the ball on this. It's not like he got elected and all of a sudden Elon Musk popped out of the celebratory cake at the victory party. Donald Trump basically campaigned on a platform of cutting the federal government, and Elon Musk was right there every step of the way those last couple of months, and Trump made it very clear, Elon is going to be the guy leading this effort. I am seeing a president making good on one of his campaign promises. And just in what's already been revealed, it's safe to say it's already worse than I ever feared. I'm almost afraid to find out what's next, but the amount of waste and outright abuse going on here, and clearly has been going on for years, if not decades, it's appalling. It's appalling. And we've barely scratched the surface. This is a borderline criminal betrayal of the American taxpayer. Just some of the findings that I'm going to do some of these from memory here. I didn't write down my own list. $2 million for pottery classes in, I think it was Morocco. $50 million in condoms to Mozambique in an effort to reduce the amount of AIDS transmission. I think you could do a Zoom call and talk about abstinence. You know, maybe do another Zoom call the next day and talk about the dangers of sexually transmitted diseases and how to avoid it. Nope. We do what the American bureaucracy does, and we just throw money at it. Oh, go ahead, you know, AIDS-infected community. Go ahead and just keep having sex with everyone. here's $50 million worth of condoms on the American taxpayer dime. $20 million to produce Sesame Street in Iraq. $1.5 million for DEI programs in Serbia. These are real. Some $70,000 for a transgender opera in Italy. $40,000 for a transgender, I think it was comic book in Peru. Now, okay, of course the detractors, and there are many and we'll get to them, are going to say, well, you know, what's $40,000 in the entire federal budget, which is, I think it's about $8 trillion. You gotta start somewhere. You can't just say, well, this is all too big. And where, you know, our budget is so incomprehensibly huge that really no amount of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions is going to sound like much when you stack it up against it. But think of it this way. Instead of trying to compare $70,000 for this transgender drama play in Italy, think of that, what that $70,000 could do in your neighborhood. Maybe it could renovate your local library. Maybe it could renovate your local community club or update some baseball fields that your neighborhood kids could play on. Or maybe it could build a skating rink outside your local community center. Think of it in those terms, because trying to compare it to, well, you know, what does $70,000 matter in an $8 trillion budget? Don't think of it in those terms. That's what they want you to think. And I got into an argument with a friend of mine last week about exactly this, because I was pointing out this exact same list, 2 million here, 70,000 there, 1.5 million there. And he kept saying, our budget's $8 trillion. I'm like, well, just because our budget's that big, you're okay with all of this just grotesque waste of money going on? He's like, yeah, whatever. It's too big. God, come on, man. I really hope that's not a majority opinion out there. Because he basically said, well, the whole thing's too big. It's so far beyond saving. Ah, to hell with it. No, screw that. This ends now, and I don't care how many chunks of $40,000 here and $70,000 there it takes. This, folks, is another beautiful example of the deep state, which, if you listen to the legacy media for the last 7 or 8 years, have been telling you on a nightly basis, it doesn't exist. They roll their eyes when they hear it. They say, oh, you know, how intravenously connected to Donald Trump are you? The deep state's not a real thing. God bless this president and Elon Musk and this Doge team for getting in there. And like I said, this is just barely scratching the surface. Most of this was found in USAID, which, again, this is an institution that none of us knew existed until 10 days ago and are only now learning just how out of control this, I'd say, borderline criminal theft of our money, of our taxpayer money, is. We should all be livid about this. This is not political. Yes, most of the abuse that's been exposed so far is feeding far left-wing pet projects, and it appears to be nothing more than just a constant fire hose of taxpayer money enriching left-wing bureaucrats and funding their wish lists, whether they're in power or not. But this all happened under the watchful or not-so-watchful eye of a lot of Republican congressmen, a lot of Republican senators, who knows how many Republican administrations and congresses. This is universally unforgivable. Everyone involved in this should be ousted from public service once and for all. Anyone that participated in it. Anyone that enabled it. I mean, this was a big F you directed at every one of us common folk from the very government that we elect to represent us. Now, yeah, a lot of this abuse was being perpetrated by bureaucrats that are multi-layers deep, that aren't elected, that aren't answerable to anyone. But there have been an awful lot of elected officials on both sides of the aisle that stood there in Washington year after year after year while this was going on, and no one ever thought to look under the hood of some of these agencies. These agencies that have gotten so blown out of proportion and so much bigger than they ever should have been. No one, left or right, ever felt it necessary to, I don't know, maybe kick the tires on USAID. God, we give these guys $50 billion every year. I wonder what they do with it. My disgust for this, it's hard to put into words. This should enrage everyone. And we should all be very, very grateful to President Trump, Elon, Doge, for pulling the curtain back on this indefensible theft of American taxpayer dollars. And that it's clearly been going on for years. I shudder to think at the amount of money our government has wasted. And to be honest, a little side note here, I guarantee you this kind of indefensible waste and, you know, people multi-layers deep just doing whatever they want with our money, I guarantee it doesn't stop with the federal government. You know this is going on in state governments, local governments, all these entities that keep saying, oh, we need more, we don't have enough, we need more, tax them more. I guarantee you this is not limited to just the federal government, and boy do I hope that this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to us as citizens electing people like Donald Trump, who will hire people like Elon Musk that will go in there and they don't care who they piss off, whose collar gets ruffled, whose hair gets messed up, who gets upset. I hope this is just the beginning, because we might find that we have been overtaxed and underserved to levels we never even considered possible before. And like I said, yeah, this might be bigger than any one of us wants to even try to comprehend. You gotta start somewhere. And this team is showing us that yes, it can be done. Yeah, it's going to take a long time. Yeah, there's going to be court battles. Yeah, the Democrats are going to set themselves on fire to try to stop you. But they're showing us it can be done. So yeah, this should infuriate everyone. So naturally, the Democrats are completely losing their minds over it. And they're freaking out about Elon and Doge having access to our sensitive information. Oh, God, give me a break. I probably get a notice about once a month on average about, we sincerely regret to inform you that your data was involved in a breach of our computer systems, and now everything you ever gave us is on the dark web. We regret to inform you your sensitive information has been compromised and is now on the dark web, probably under the watchful eye of some criminal in Bangladesh. Well, safe to say I'm far more concerned about the cyber criminal in Bangladesh having my sensitive information than I am about Elon Musk, who's about the most visible, transparent person on Earth outside of Donald Trump right now. And you know what? Even if this Doge team and Elon Musk are just out to get our Social Security numbers and steal all our money, boy do I pity the fool that wastes his time trying to hack my poor broke ass. Good luck, pal. You're going to get to the end of that road and be very, very disappointed. I'll apologize in advance for you wasting your time. Clearly, the marching orders went out from the DNC. They're all bored now with the threat to democracy because they spent 2 years shouting that into the moon, and all it got them was losing every branch of government. So obviously, that didn't work. So clearly, the new marching orders went out from the DNC, and as they are so wont to do, the Democrats and their sycophants in the legacy media dutifully obeyed. They've fully redirected their vitriol almost solely now on Elon Musk, claiming he's bought his way into the Trump administration, that he's unvetted, that he's unelected, and that it's a conflict of interest to have someone as rich as him near the levers of power, and that it's creating a constitutional crisis. That's the new word. Like I said, we got bored with threat to democracy. Okay, that wasn't working. We got to freshen up the... We got to freshen up the attack a little bit. So here we are. We've arrived at constitutional crisis. Now, I don't know. Democrats never seem to have a problem with, say, Michael Bloomberg, one of the richest people on earth, financing his way all the way to the New York City mayor's office in a run for president. Democrats had zero issues whatsoever with George Soros openly purchasing dozens, if not hundreds, of elections across this country, infusing soft-on-crime district attorneys into many of our major metropolitan areas. Democrats cheered endlessly while Kamala Harris campaigned with celebrity after celebrity and millionaire after millionaire for four straight months. But now Elon Musk is working for free, by the way, to at long last start cutting the waste, the fraud, the excess from our federal government, and now we suddenly have a problem with wealthy people involved in government. The hypocrisy is off the charts. And see, this is what happens when you are wholly immersed in ideology. When you let your partisanship guide your every move. When you vote Democrat straight down the ticket every year, every election, no matter who is actually on the ballot. How else do you think we ended up with Adam Schiff, Maxine Waters, Eric Swalwell, Gavin Newsom, and Nancy Pelosi? Good God, California. Thanks for absolutely nothing. Of course, who am I to talk? My dumbass state has given us Tim Walz and Ilhan Omar. So who am I to talk? But this is what happens. Rules for thee, but not for me. Democrats haven't had any problem with their endless parade of millionaires and billionaires endorsing them and their candidates. They have no standards, no ideals, no universal set of rules that apply to everyone, regardless of political affiliation. Now suddenly we have a wealthy businessman involved in politics, and it's a problem. Oh, but again, it's not only that. It's the word of the day is constitutional crisis, and they're all repeating it like the good little pet parrots that they are. Let me be very frank here. And I want you to share this with anybody that you hear bring up this drivel. There is no constitutional crisis. Trump has not disobeyed any court order. He said in the Oval Office yesterday he will obey any court order. He knows better the court process than just about anyone on earth. He spent the better part of the last 2 years in and out of courtrooms. The guy gets sued for everything, even before he got into politics. He was a businessman, real estate. People were constantly coming after him. He hasn't disobeyed any court orders. And he said, yeah, I will obey them, and I will fight them, and I will appeal them. Let me be very clear here. I support DOGE. I support the cutting of government waste. All of it, 100%. This is something I've been waiting my entire life for, to have someone to have the guts to go in there and do it. My only request is that it is done within the law. Now, I listen to three podcasts religiously, all of them with hosts that have law degrees and have practiced law to varying levels throughout their careers. One is openly conservative, one is a lifelong liberal, and one is right down the middle. They all agree, all three of them, from all three of these unique perspectives, there is no crisis. And most of the legal challenges that have been filed by the Democrats are going to fail. Maybe not all, but most. And that's their opinion. That's not mine. Again, please listen to The Dershowitz Show with Alan Dershowitz. He does three podcasts a week. They're about 30 to 35 minutes apiece. He is a lifelong constitutional lawyer. He's in his 80s, but you'd never know it by listening to him. He is as smart and as sharp as it gets, and nobody understands this stuff better than he does. I can't recommend him enough, especially under the circumstances. He's been practicing constitutional law for almost 7 decades. And again, if the court legitimately strikes anything down, I say it needs to stop. And Trump has said he will stop. He will appeal. He will follow the process. He's not openly defying any court orders. Now, the main defense for these lawsuits is that Elon is unelected, and he shouldn't have access to this information. They're saying it violates the separation of powers, because the legislature, specifically the House of Representatives, has the power of the purse and decides on funding decisions, and ultimately is in charge of creating the budget. Now, these agencies that are in question are part of the executive branch, so that's where the overlap is happening, and that's where these two independent branches of our government are at a little bit of odds here. Of course, Trump and his administration is saying that the president should have, discretion on within the executive branch, the money that's been allocated to these agencies that all report to him. Yes, some of them have been created by the legislature, but they are all part of the executive branch. And everyone from top to bottom in the executive branch of our federal government works for and serves at the pleasure of the president of the United States. Now, the Democrats are saying that the president should have no say in these funding decisions because it's up to the legislature to allocate the money. And once that money is there, the president, even though now, okay, USAID, here's your $50 billion. They're saying that even the president and his administration should have absolutely no say on where that money goes once it's in the agency. Now, that's hard enough to defend on its face, but just think that through for a minute. Okay, yes, the House has the power when it comes to the budget, how much money each federal agency will get. They don't go that deep. Like I said, it's a line item on the budget. USAID gets $50 billion. That's as far as the legislature is going to take it. The House isn't drilling down to the thousand, or even in most cases, even the $1 million level for the specific funding decisions like the ones that we've talked about already. So who is ultimately making these thousand and $1 million decisions? Answer? Unelected bureaucrats. Just like the Democrats are accusing Elon of being and saying, because he is an unelected bureaucrat, he should have no control over this. But who's making these decisions within the agencies? Unelected bureaucrats. How can this possibly be? How can it possibly be that an unelected bureaucrat, some 7 or 8 levels deep within a federal agency, can decide, we're going to spend $20 million of your tax money to fund Sesame Street in Iraq, but the president's right-hand man can't come in and say, no, we're done with that. The executive branch is wholly controlled by the president. He is the executive branch. These bureaucracies and these agencies, they've all been added to the executive branch over the course of many, many, many years, and has ballooned this particular branch of the federal government into far more than the framers ever intended. But the one good thing is they all serve at the pleasure of the president. Yes, the funding comes from the House, and the executive branch cannot cut any agency that was created by Congress without congressional approval. But the inner workings of these agencies, to me, and according to the people that I listen to, is completely fair game. Why should President Trump have to continue with interagency funding decisions largely being made that either were made by the Biden administration or are still being made by holdovers from that administration? It's nonsensical. So naturally, that's what the Democrats are hanging their hat on. You know what? Democrats, good luck defending this stuff. And I got to tell you, this is a pretty idiotic move by the Democrats. They've taken the very unenviable position of defending the overinflated federal bureaucracies and the countless unelected bureaucrats that have been all but stealing your money for decades. They've taken their side. Good luck with that. The majority of the American people, last polling I heard, was 51% are in favor of what DOGE is doing. And I'd argue that that number only isn't higher because there is so much fire alarm pulling going on in the legacy media about separation of powers and constitutional crisis. I think once that all gets put to bed, I don't see how this doesn't become a 90-10 issue. What makes the federal government so special? The private sector has to answer to profit and to shareholders or business owners. They have to answer to efficiency standards. Who's the government answering to? Especially these mid-level bureaucrats. Who are they answering to? No one. There's always more money. You just tax more or print more. No accountability whatsoever. Why are federal government workers somehow entitled to guaranteed career employment? Ben Shapiro yesterday on his show asked a pertinent question. Is the entire federal government just one big entitlement program set up for the benefit of its own employees? I mean, it sure seems like it's been operating like it is. Now, to this point, this has been really nothing more than a very long overdue audit. And Elon Musk and DOGE are not doing anything that they are not given strict
directions for by the president. And Doge and Elon can't cut anything. Ultimately, it's the president that is doing that. Anything that's been cut or halted has been an order directly from the Oval Office. Yes, Elon and Doge are the ones finding it. They can't make those decisions. They have said in interviews, in press conferences, that they can't do that on their own. And Trump has said they can't do anything on their own. They're doing what I ask them to do. They don't make any decisions without my say-so. And again, once this garbage gets cleared up in the courts, which I'm sure most of it, if not all of it, will, I don't know how this doesn't become a 90-10 issue with the American people. This level of abuse it's indefensible. And we need to hold everyone involved, either centrally or peripherally involved, accountable for this larceny that's been perpetrated on the American people. Trump has been keeping up an unbelievable pace right from day one. I mean, he's been in office 3 weeks, and he's, if he keeps this pace up, I can't wait to see how much better this country looks if he's able to keep up half of this pace. Trump's approval rating right now is 53% approve. That's the highest his approval has ever been. 70% of respondents to this CBS poll say that he's doing what he promised to do, and 70% say he's demonstrating himself as a strong leader. 70%. On his defense of women, keeping men out of their sports and out of their locker rooms and out of their private spaces, 79% of Americans and even 67% of Democrats agree with how he's handling it. This was a bigger issue in the campaign than most gave it credit for, and he is 100% delivering on it. 59% of respondents in this poll agree with deporting, quote, all illegal immigrants, not just the criminals. Tom Holman, Kristi Noem, and their teams are doing outstanding work ridding our country of dangerous, criminal, illegal immigrants. It'll take time, but again, you have to start somewhere, and this team has absolutely hit the ground running. How about the military? Recruitment in the military hit a 12-year high in December, and then a 15-year high in January. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has immediately put our military back on track. Recruitment ads are back to being badass and are drawing young soldiers back into our armed forces once again. And there is a very cool video out there of Secretary Hegseth working out with recruits. How freaking cool is that? You just show up, you know, for your 12th day of basic training, and in walks the freaking Secretary of Defense. And he takes his suit off, and he's got a tank top and a pair of workout shorts on, and joins you in your workout. How freaking cool is that? This administration is so much more organized, so much better prepared than in Trump's first term. And in his defense, I mean, he'd never run for office before. That was the first public office he ever held, was the presidency in January 2017. And it showed. He had no idea how much the people around him were going to work against him. And this time, the man learned his lesson. He surrounded himself with his people instead of placating the entire Washington establishment with a bunch of D.C. lifers like he did last time. He's moving at a breakneck pace, doing exactly what he promised the American people he would do. And those American people elected him because of it. He won the popular vote by millions of votes. He won the Electoral College in a complete landslide. Republicans won the Senate. Republicans held on to the House. This is what the majority of this country voted for. But you wouldn't know that by listening to the Democrats and our cesspool of a legacy media. Trump has taken the right side of a lot of 80-20 issues in this country, and he got elected because of it. And in the meantime, Democrats are scrambling, trying to defend the 20% side of these issues that are... These issues are over. These 80-20 issues, the men and women's sports, the illegal, the criminal illegal aliens, the closing the border, these are all 80-20 issues that the Democrats completely ceded to Donald Trump and the Republicans. and they are living the fruits of that labor right now. The best kept secret of the 2024 presidential race was that Donald Trump was the moderate. There was nothing moderate about Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Tim Walz. Abortion on demand through the ninth month, trans minor sanctuaries being set up in Minnesota on Tim Walz's watch, tampons and boys' bathrooms, DEI and identity politics infecting every aspect of American life. These were not and are not moderate positions. These are far left positions that cost the Democrats elections across the country. But they can't let it go. They can't let any of it go. They've learned absolutely nothing. The Democrat Party approval rating right now is 31%. Let me say that again. The favorability, the approval rating of the Democrat Party right now, 31%. That is an almost impossible number to grasp. They are so blinded by their TDS. They continually take the wrong side of these 80-20 issues, and they are going to continue to lose as long as they keep this up. And personally, I hope they do. I hope they keep going with the lawsuits. I hope they keep taking these 20% positions. I hope they keep acting like children and acting hysterically. I hope they keep lying because the American people are onto it. Their media monopoly is now and forever broken, and they simply cannot process it. And now Trump, Elon, and Doge are in on their underhanded, self-enrichment scheme buried deep within the executive branch of our federal government. And you know what? Now Doge is going to be moving on to the Department of Education. A completely unnecessary department, by the way. The United States was number one in education worldwide when the Department of Education was created in 1979. At last check, we are currently 16th in science and 34th in math among 81 ranked nations, and getting further and further behind. We spend the most on education around the entire world, about the fourth most per capita, and are getting less and less out of it. And after what Doge found at USAID, I cringe when I think about what they're going to find at the Department of Education. The Democrats clearly don't want whatever waste and fraud is going on at the Department of Education to get out. And there is no better evidence of that than Maxine Waters, another one of California's gifts to the rest of us. She's a congresswoman that's been in office for, probably as long as I've been alive. She led an entourage to the Department of Education last week and was, because she was going to go in there and just lay down the law and say, you're not cutting anything. This is a blah, 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 whatever grandstanding she was going to do. Well, she was stopped. Her and her entourage were stopped by a security guard out front of the Department of Education building, because they don't just let anybody walk into these federal buildings. Listen to how she treated him. This is the party that says they're for the little guy, and that they love everyone, and that they're all about the blue-collar worker. Well, there's campaigning, and then there's how you behave in real life. I want you to listen to how Maxine Waters talks to this security guard. This is what they really think of blue-collar workers. They despise them. Listen to how she talks to him.
What do you do here?
Security responsibility.
Get out of here. We pay you.
We're members of
Congress.
We haven't heard that from the secretary.
I'm relaying that.
You are not the spokesman for the department. You are a security guard.
We are members of Congress. We'd like them to the Department of Education.
You don't have any identification. Where's your ID?
We are not a threat to security. We're members of Congress.
She had the nerve to tell this security guard, We pay you. Someone who has not made a dime that hasn't come directly from our tax dollars in over 30 years had the nerve to tell a security guard, we pay you. That's how disconnected from reality these lifelong DC swamp creatures like Maxine Waters are. At the end of that sounder, when she asked the security guard, who was doing his job, not letting people into the Department of Education that weren't on the schedule, when she asked him at the end of that soundbite for his ID, he took it out and showed it to her. She didn't even look at it. She flicked it with her finger and said, that's not good enough. Go back and listen to that again. The disdain is dripping from her fangs. Looking at this worthless security guard that has the nerve to get in her way. Oh, the mighty congresswoman from California can't just walk into the Department of Education like she owns the place. Well, I got news for you, Maxine. You're part of the legislative branch. The Department of Education is under the executive branch. If they don't want you in there, they don't have to let you in there. All of these Democrat politicians say, we're members of Congress. We're here to go talk to the people at the Department of Education. Well, guess what, members of Congress? That's not up to you. She wasn't done.
Look them in the eye. Come on, hold your face up. Look at them. Let them see you. This is him. Look at it. What's your name? Tell us your name. Give me that ID again.
I gave you the ID. I shared it to you.
So what?
I showed you the ID.
You do what?
I showed you the
Could
ID.
Could you let me see the ID again? Huh?
No.
Will someone else ask him for the ID? Will you ask him for it? He won't let me see it again. You didn't see it.
I haven't
you didn't
seen
see it.
I
they didn't see it.
She's talking to him like a dog. Go back and listen to that one again. Can you stand that? I would expect more adult behavior out of my 15-year-old. I encourage you to go watch these videos. They're 30 seconds apiece. She looks at him like he's nothing. That's what they really think of the everyday worker, the everyday American. They hate them. They are but bugs to be squashed in the eyes of these lifelong DC swamp dwellers. Props to that guy, because there is a 0% chance I would have remained that cool, that calm, and that respectful under the circumstances. After she flicks his ID that she asked for and said, that's not good. She didn't even look at it. It's not like she grabbed it, looked at it, you know, saw that it was a company issue and not government issue or whatever the hell it is she's looking for. She wasn't looking for anything. Nothing was going to be good enough. It could have been a letter signed by the president. It wouldn't have been good enough. That's not what it was about. It was about her exuding her perceived power over him. And good for him. I don't even know his name. Good for him for standing his ground. As these grown adults sit there and whine like kindergartners. You know, I've learned something over the last couple of years. If Looney Tune progressives like Maxine Waters are upset about something, I almost automatically like it. This is the same woman, Maxine Waters. This is the same woman that after Trump was elected the first time, she told her followers to go after Trump, anybody, Trump voters, Trump supporters, members of Trump's administration, to go after them at gas stations, at restaurants, and to let them know they're not welcome. Same woman. Keep it up, California. Thanks for sending us your best. This just makes me triple down. Don't ever let up. Don't ever relent. Follow the law, but it is full steam ahead as far as I'm concerned. Gut every single one of these corrupt institutions. Right down to the bones, if that's what it takes. And then build it back up from the ground with people that want to work for us, not for themselves. I've been waiting for outsiders to go to Washington, D.C. and shake up this entire cult my entire life. And I am here for every single bit of this. It is long overdue time that we take our country back from this unelected administrative state once and for all. If there's a walking advertisement for term limits that's more effective than listening to Maxine Waters talk to that security guard, I don't know what is. show me a better advertisement for term limits than that. Thank you, President Trump, for doing this on our behalf. You want to know why Trump got cheered at the Super Bowl? This is why. I have a few thoughts on the Middle East conflict I'd like to share with you. I've tried to stay away from commenting on this because it's so complicated. It's been going on for so long. It obviously has a very heavy religious aspect to it, and that can be all but radioactive to talk about if you're not extremely well informed on the topic. Again, I've listened to some people that I trust on this topic, and even they don't all agree with each other. But I feel like I've learned enough about this situation that I feel comfortable sharing my opinion on it with you. The Jewish population in this world has to be the most historically persecuted, most historically targeted population on Earth. Now, the horrors of World War II are obviously well documented. The Holocaust, the concentration camps, the gas chambers. I mean, it's horrifying in ways that I can't even describe. Now, Israel is about 8,600 square miles. It's about the size of New Jersey. It's inhabited by around 10 million people, about 70 to 75% of which are Jewish. The remaining is mostly Arab, and of course a few from other countries, but about 75% Jewish and about 25% Arab. Now, Israel and these 10 million people in this democracy are surrounded by some give or take 500 million people inhabiting the surrounding Arab countries, most of which are monarchies or loosely organized, basically terror states like Syria, who just had their leadership fall, and Lebanon, that is a terrorist laden mess. You know, they're surrounded by, you know, countries on other sides like Jordan and Egypt, and like I said, a lot of these are monarchies. Now, most of these countries have historically been indifferent to Israel's survival. Some are actively seeking to destroy it and rid the world of Jews once and for all. And you're seeing that play out right now with what Hamas is doing to them under the guise of the Palestinians in Gaza. It has nothing to do with the Palestinians in Gaza. It's all about Hamas and these terror cells that really are just long arms of mostly the Iranian empire. So think of Israel as New Jersey and the rest of the Middle East as the continental United States, but add about 150 million or so more people. That's how isolated Israel is. Now, some today describe the Jews as living in Israel as occupiers. Now, these people are either completely ignorant of world Israeli and Jewish history, or they're just simply anti-Semitic. Jewish presence in the land of Israel goes all the way back to the Bible. Now, you may or may not believe in the Bible, but human civilizations have been conquering other human civilizations going all the way back to the Bible. And it goes as far back, I mean, it goes back as far as human history. Humans have forever been trying to conquer and kill other humans to take their land, take their resources. Contrary to popular leftist belief, that didn't start with the pilgrims arriving in the New World from 15th century Europe. And it did not start with the establishment of Israel following World War II. Movement of populations has happened throughout human history. History has shown that when you start a war and you lose it, you lose land, you lose territory, and your people likely will get displaced. None of this is new. But for some reason, when it comes to the Jews, when it comes to Israel, all of this history seems to get very conveniently ignored. Now, Israel is a U.S. ally, one of our strongest in the world. I like to think, and this is probably fairly naive to those who have a strong disdain for the military-industrial complex, I like to think that the U.S. chooses its allies fairly carefully. Maybe not our government, but we as people, we look around the world and we identify with people who are like us. We don't scour the planet looking for conflict. We don't scour the planet looking to start wars. Now, yes, Israel has sadly been involved in many, many wars. I challenge you to find the conflict in which Israel was the initial aggressor. Israelis are under constant threat of attack on a number of different fronts. First and foremost, Iran and their terror cells, Hezbollah, Hamas. They're under threat from Syria, what's left of it. Again, nobody really knows what to expect there now that they've had this regime change to some new leader now that apparently went back and forth from Al-Qaeda to Hamas and now kind of started his own group. Well, boy, that sounds like it's going to turn out well. And then they're under attack from Gaza, where Hamas took over what was a Palestinian state, if you will. Now, October 7th, 2023 is every bit as important to Israel as September 11th, 2001 is to Americans. On October 7th, 2023, Hamas terrorists unleashed an unprovoked attack of Jews and other Israelis at a music festival, most of them young people. They killed 1,200 Jews and Israelis, other Israelis. They took 250 hostages. Now, to put that into perspective, the U.S. equivalent of that, based on total population, would be 40,000 dead and 8,000 taken hostage. That was the American equivalent. We lost about 3,500 people on September 11th. Israel lost our equivalent of 40,000 on October 7th. These terrorists that were basically dropping out of the sky, literally, they raped, they tortured, they burned, they killed, they kidnapped 1,200 people. Again, most of them young, celebrating a music festival, completely minding their own business. Now, Israel responded in kind, all but tearing Gaza to the ground in a war that's been raging ever since. Now, somehow, there are many, and including clueless, spoiled brats on some of our most elite college campuses, that say Israel is to blame. You've heard all the chants. From the river to the sea, not one of them knowing what river or what sea they're even chanting about. Globalize the Intifada, and they have no idea what Intifada means. These people, they have no idea. Imbeciles, all of them. They say Israel is the one pursuing a genocide. They're basing this off the civilian casualty count in Gaza, which every civilian casualty is a tragedy, not just in this war, in any war. War is ugly. Israel didn't ask for this war. This war was forced upon them. And Hamas doesn't fight like civilized societies fight. They fight dirty. They bury themselves in terror tunnels beneath schools, beneath hospitals, beneath heavy population centers, for the exact purpose of being able to broadcast civilian casualties to the rest of the world in order to gain sympathy. What is Israel supposed to do? They've sent in tactical teams trying to root out these Hamas terrorists from the Gaza Strip, doing everything they can at the cost of many of their own lives to try to limit the amount of civilian casualties in Gaza. Now put yourself in that situation. And I encourage you to throw this out there to anyone that you hear that has any kind of sympathy for Israel's opponents in this war, or that thinks Israel's going too far. Put yourself in that situation. What would you do if it was your family that was under constant threat? What if it was your family that was taken hostage? What if it was your faith that was constantly under siege from these people who seek to wipe you out? These idiots say we need a two-state solution. You know what? We had a two-state solution on October 6th, 2023. What those same people won't tell you is that in 2005, Israel removed all of their citizens from Gaza and from the West Bank, granting the Palestinians this land and giving them a chance to finally have their own country, their own government, elect their own leadership, create their own society. And after just 2 years, the Gazans elected Hamas terrorists as their leader. And ever since 2006, it's been a destabilized terrorist hellhole every day since. These terrorists repeatedly stole foreign aid aimed at helping them build this sustainable society. And then they used it to build terror tunnels and arm themselves for endless attacks on Israel. Versions of this endless cycle have repeated themselves over and over and over again for almost 80 years now. And it really, that's just since the establishment of the Jewish state. This conflict and versions of it go back millennia. No one in this country knows what it's like to live under these conditions. Every night under constant threat of attack, air raid sirens just being a part of normal everyday life. Going to sleep every night, never really sure if you're going to wake up the next day. And let's not forget how woefully outnumbered Israel is. 500 million in the Arab countries around them to the 10 million in Israel. 50-1, they're outnumbered. How are they supposed to respond when they're attacked? In my opinion, their response has to be disproportionate. When you're outnumbered 50-1, how long can you last going tit for tat? They can't. They have to respond with overwhelming force. It's the only way they can survive. They, like the United States, at least our people, don't seek out these fights. The people don't seek out the fights. They think what you want about governments and leadership and what their motives are for involving themselves in wars. But the people, the Jewish people, the American people, don't seek out these kinds of fights. The Israeli people, the Jewish people, are a peaceful people. The Jewish faith is a peaceful faith. Put yourself in their position. The country right next to them, their neighbors, openly calling for your genocide when you're horribly outnumbered. You've been oppressed throughout all of your history, all of your ancestors, all the way back to the biblical times. What are they supposed to do? I think they're 100% justified in their actions. Of course, every civilian casualty is a tragedy, and if Hamas had any hearts, they'd let the innocent people, the Palestinian people that just want to live in peace in Gaza, they'd let them go. They don't let them go. They need them. They need them to shield them. They need them so when they get killed by Israeli rockets, they can broadcast that to the rest of the world to show everyone how awful the Jews are. Israel is trying to ensure its own survival. I am of the belief that if no one ever fired on Israel ever again, it is my firm belief that Israel would never be at war again. That is my opinion. Now, of course, all of this got flipped upside down last week when Donald Trump suggested that at a press conference with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, that he would like to see the U.S., quote, take over Gaza, clearing out the area, removing all the unexploded ordnance and other explosives littering the landscape in the Gaza Strip, clearing all the debris, and basically rebuilding Gaza into something that would resemble the Riviera of the Mediterranean. Now, does he really mean we take it over? No, of course not. This is a negotiating tactic. Oldest trick in the book. You over-ask at the outset. You don't give anything up. You don't leave anything off the table at the beginning of a negotiation. He knows every Arab. There's not an Arab country over there, and probably not even Israel, that would want it to work out this way. He knows that. No, there isn't going to be 20,000 U.S. troops on the ground in Gaza, straight in the middle of harm's way. Trump campaigned on ending foreign wars. Why on earth would he immediately deploy thousands of U.S. soldiers to the Middle East? He clearly wants the other wealthier countries in this area to take the lead on this. This is Israel's battle to fight, to see through to the end. Now, Hamas, in this quote-unquote ceasefire agreement that is tenuously staying together at best, Hamas is already slow-rolling the release of hostages. The ones that were released yesterday looked like they hadn't eaten in a month. I can't imagine what these poor people are going through. So Hamas is already defaulting on this already, you know, loosely held together ceasefire agreement. Bottom line is Hamas cannot remain in power in Gaza. That is a non-starter, even though that is one of the stipulations of the current ceasefire agreement. I mean, just again, imagine the U.S. allowing a terror organization to run a country right along our borders. It would never happen. Israel has every right to finish this fight. Now, Trump wants to get the innocent Palestinian people out of harm's way. But like I said, Hamas won't let anyone leave. That's why nobody leaves. They use their civilians as human shields, and they're not about to give that up. Now, once rebuilt, under whatever conditions it eventually happens, this would obviously take many, many years. Now, Trump suggested that the Palestinian people, those that want to return, could return. And in this vision, live a life with job opportunities and safety and stability and security being the norm, rather than endless war. Now, he's a real estate man. That's who he was his entire life before turning to national politics. He's looking at this partly as president of the United States and partly through the eyes of a real estate investor. He knows there's no going back. We're not going back to the status quo. The ways of the last 80 years doing the same damn thing under the same failed guidance from the same so-called foreign policy experts, the John Kerrys of the world, those days are over. And he, God bless him, had the guts to suggest something outside the box, something different from what anyone had ever suggested before. And it's already changed the conversation of how to move forward over there. Already. In the space of a few days, change the conversation of what the next phase of the Middle East is going to look like. I say give it a chance. Trump alone has been able to forge more peace in the Middle East than any U.S. president before him. He was able to achieve the Abraham Accords, with several neighboring Arab countries for the first time ever acknowledging Israel's sovereignty and its right to exist, for the first time in its existence. All these same foreign policy experts said it could never happen. And every single one of them was wrong. The Middle East never knew peace like it had during Trump's first term. And then the Biden administration came in and lit the entire area on fire again with all the same failed policies. So now it's back on Trump's plate to clean it up once again. Give it a chance. His suggestion was a starting point, not an ending point. It was meant to open up the conversation and get people talking about this area in a different way and how to move forward in a way that no one has ever thought of before. Who knows? It just might work. One more quick thing that I don't want to let disappear from the news cycle. I know that talk on Israel and the Middle East, it's heavy stuff, and I want to end on a happy note. Well, a somewhat happy note. We'll get through one more very heartbreaking thing, but then we'll get to the good part. Sean Duffy, who is the newly minted Secretary of Transportation for the Trump administration, Sean Duffy and Hillary Clinton got into a hilarious Twitter war, albeit over something that is not to be joked about. But once you get past the fact that this shouldn't be joked about, you'll know what I mean here in a second. So Sean Duffy has had about the most trial by fire first week on the job of anyone in any job ever. He wasn't in office 12 hours when that mid-air collision happened over DC between that military helicopter and that passenger jet. That was his first day on the job. Can you even imagine? And then I don't remember how many days after, 1, 2, 3 days after, that medical flight goes down in Pennsylvania. Now, this is all tragic. Every single bit of it is tragic. Duffy, to his credit, is handling it like a pro, on the fly, out front, transparent, I mean, demonstrating leadership at its finest. So, of course, Hillary Clinton felt like it would be a good time to interject her not-so-NTSB level expertise on our transportation industry. She went full-on political. Now, I'm going to read you this back and forth between the two of them because it's hysterical. She went full-on political before the National Transportation Safety Board investigations have barely even begun. You won't believe this. My God, she's a despicable human being. So like I said, Hillary Clinton thought that this would be a good time to interject her complete lack of any knowledge whatsoever of our transportation industry or what makes it go, or even basic facts for that matter. So she decides to go after Doge. So she starts off by saying they have no relevant experience. Most of them aren't old enough to rent a car. This from one of the leaders of the party that says 9-year-olds can dictate what sex they are and completely comprehend the life-altering consequences of the irreversible surgeries. But, you know, again, when you have no standards, this is how hypocritical you can be. Anyway, most of them are not even old enough to rent a car, and you're going to let them mess with airline safety that's already deteriorated on your watch? He'd been in office for like 2 days. To which Secretary Duffy responds with, quote, "Madam Secretary, with all due respect, experienced Washington bureaucrats are the reason our nation's infrastructure is crumbling. You need to sit this one out." So instead of just going away like she so badly just freaking needs to, nope, Hillary wasn't done. Quote, "U.S. airlines had gone 16 years without fatal crashes. Then MAGA fired the FAA chief, gutted the Aviation Security Advisory Committee, and threatened air traffic controllers with layoffs. Now there have been 2 fatal crashes. Hope your unvetted 22-year-olds fix things fast." Disgusting human being. But, classy leader that he is, Sean Duffy, quote, "I know you're lashing out because Doge is uncovering your family's obscene grifting via USAID, but I won't let you lie and distort facts. The FAA administrator you referred to announced he resigned over a month before Trump took office. And the air traffic controllers to which you refer were always exempt from Trump's civil service buyouts. The previous administration shamelessly used the U.S. Department of Transportation as a slush fund for the Green New Scam, throwing away money and resources on wasteful environmental and social justice projects rather than updating our nation's antiquated air traffic control systems and other critical infrastructure. I'm returning this department to its mission of safety by using innovative technology in transportation and infrastructure. Your team had its chance and failed. We're moving on without you because the American people want us to make America's transportation system great again. And yes, we're bringing the 22-year-olds with us." Boom! Mic drop. Eat that, Madam Secretary. Hell yeah, Sean Duffy. I have nothing more to add. That is a perfect way to end. Hillary Clinton, go the hell away. Just for all of our sakes, go the hell away. Thank you, everyone, once again for joining me for Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Well done, Mr. Secretary. And I'll talk to you next time.